Today, Prime Minister Anthony Albanese and Federal Treasurer Jim Chalmers have called upon some of the biggest names in Australian economics to suggest how they might adapt Australia's economy to be ready for the future. The main goal of the round table is to boost productivity in Australia, which has dropped from 1.8% to 0.9% in the past two decades. There will also be discussion on how to reform several government schemes, such as the NDIS, the building laws, and also working benefits such as the proposal of the four-day work week. James Bale asked independent economist Saul Eslake what were some of the factors that have led to this decline in productivity and what can be done to address those factors.
Relatively low levels of business investment, especially outside of the mining sector, since the onset of the global financial crisis now 17 years ago, which have meant that workers have less capital, less tools and equipment to work with, and relatively low wages have encouraged employers to substitute labour for capital. Secondly, there's clearly been a decline in labour mobility. That is, workers moving from jobs to which they're perhaps not as well suited to ones for which they're better suited, and particularly for younger workers, ones which are better paid. I would argue that in Australia, government policies that have tended to favour small business have had an adverse impact on productivity growth, because productivity in small businesses is about 19% below the average for all businesses, and small business accounts for a declining share of total employment. And then finally, there hasn't really been any significant productivity-enhancing reforms. Productivity-enhancing reform has become more politically challenging, and instead what we've had is a proliferation of regulation which have had a dampening impact on productivity growth and an adverse impact on business costs.
Another one of these major productivity reforms is the four-day working week. Will this be beneficial or counterintuitive for boosting productivity?
At face value, an across-the-board mandate of a four-day working week with no change in pay would represent an increase in costs to employers of at least 20%. And that's something that would almost certainly result in some combination of higher inflation and reduced employment or increased unemployment. And I certainly have no objection to workers and their unions and employers seeking to negotiate trade-offs like that. But to have it mandated and enforced through law would, I think, have an adverse impact on productivity rather than a positive one.
One of the key talking points for the roundtable is the changes to the NDIS. What are some of the ways that the government can reform the NDIS to make it more financially sustainable?
I think the issues with the NDIS are the implications of the continued very rapid growth in the cost to the federal government in particular of this scheme. The target of 8% per annum still implies that it will continue to grow as a share of the economy. There's obviously evidence that state governments have been shifting the cost of some of the programs they've traditionally administered to the NDIS in order to do that. It may well be that the government needs to find other ways of constraining the rate of growth in spending on that scheme. Or alternatively, if they can't do that, then the conversation perhaps needs to shift to what other ways can be found of paying for that scheme so that it's not funded by borrowed money. There were, at the beginning of this process, some fairly high ambitions that the roundtable could launch a more comprehensive round of tax reform, but the Prime Minister has been quick to hose down any of that talk. Hopefully, the roundtable might clear the way for the government to have an adult conversation with the electorate that might allow the government to seek a mandate for more ambitious tax reforms after the 2028 election. It would seem that that's the best that we can hope for, given the parameters that the Prime Minister has laid down.
Should be taken into account when it comes to preparing the country for the current financial uncertainty?
Governments need to make it clear that there are limits to what they can do to cope with external shocks. In particular, the economic policies being imposed by the Trump administration are likely to result in certainly higher inflation and lower economic growth in the United States. What the US is doing results in weaker economic growth in China. That will have some adverse consequences for the Australian economy, given that China takes more than 36% of Australia's exports. They've avoided unnecessarily antagonizing the United States without unnecessarily giving anything away. But in other respects, I think the roundtable may result in some short-term measures that would be helpful in dealing with specific challenges. For example, reducing the regulatory burden that is imposed on dwelling construction and speeding up the process of approving new housing construction, which, as the productivity chair pointed out this week, has blown out by 50% over the last couple of decades. But in addition to that, my hope is that the roundtable will mark the beginning of what would need to be extended and careful conversations with the Australian electorate to persuade them of the need for more comprehensive reforms, with a view not just to improving productivity, but for sharing the benefits of faster productivity growth equitably between employers, workers and consumers, but also for repairing the nation's finances and putting the finances of the federal government and most of the states and territory governments into better shape and more sustainable shape over the longer term.
Independent economist Saul Eslake there, speaking with James Bale on the Economic Reform Roundtable.